This is Ozarks at Large. Stephanie R. Marks is the author of Paula's Journal, Surviving Autism. The Bentonville resident is celebrating her 40th birthday this month, and she herself is autistic. The book is a work of fiction, but based on Stephanie's experiences as a nonverbal autistic woman. Because she is nonverbal, Stephanie created the book through the use of facilitated communication. In an email interview, Stephanie writes, "It was wonderful to discover facilitated communication because now she can tell people what she needs and how she feels." She says it was a difficult process creating the book, but she's glad she didn't give up. She came up with the idea for the book after learning to facilitate and after taking a creative writing class. Stephanie writes that she wants to help people with autism as well as those who care for people with autism. Someone who has helped care for Stephanie is her mother, Holly Fields. Holly recently stopped by Studio 123 at KUAF to visit with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. During their conversation, Holly explained what it was like to raise a daughter with autism decades ago.
Well, it was very different. I don't know that it was any easier than it is now, but you didn't have access to information. And the professionals in your child's life were not as aware of autism as they are now, or what to do to help children and parents both. Stephanie wasn't actually diagnosed with autism till she was about 17. She was in her late teens. She was undiagnosed. We knew there were difficulties that she was facing. We knew there were delays. She couldn't speak. I mean, lots of things going on. But even though when she was young, we lived in Houston and she had access, we had access to great medical facilities, I guess autism was still at that point where the information wasn't widespread. And so even though she was tested and all these things, they didn't diagnose autism at all, ever. So she went many, many years just sort of without her knowing or us knowing. And when she finally was diagnosed, it was actually here in Fayetteville. And she said it was such a relief. She said, you know, most people don't want a label, but she was relieved to know she wasn't crazy and that there really was a name for what was going on for her. So it was difficult because even though we didn't know she had autism per se, we knew that there were a lot of things she struggled with and things we had no explanation for and no one could explain to us. And so we were very much in the dark, and it was scary and, you know, and sometimes just really disheartening that we couldn't get answers and couldn't get the help we needed to be better parents and to help her really move on with her life and you know, have a life and learn and do things. So,
what were some of the challenges that you had to deal with? Did she go to public school or?
She did go to public school in Houston. She went to a self-contained classroom at a regular school. When we moved here, that was not available. She went to Sunshine School, which was totally separate and apart. She was one of the first students, though, who did enter the regular schools in Bentonville. There were, I don't remember, two or three students with severe challenges that entered the public school when she would be junior high age. And that was a milestone here, you know, and everywhere, really. Things just weren't done the same. And one of the things she tells people now is that she is angry about the fact she missed out on a lot of learning and that she had to pretty much teach herself or learn in other ways than in a classroom. After high school, she was fortunate enough to go to NWAC and take several classes, and that was exciting, and that really gave her an opportunity she never dreamed she would have, and so that was wonderful.
And somewhere after being diagnosed with autism, I understand you guys learned about facilitated communication?
Yes. In fact, all of it sort of happened in and around the same time frame in her late teens. facilitated communication was brought to us by a friend of ours who was actually a special education teacher in the Springdale schools. She had gone to Syracuse for continuing education and learned about facilitated communication there and was very excited to bring it back and try it with Stephanie. And there was just instant rapport there, which is somewhat unusual, but it was wonderful that she was able to introduce it to her and then also teach me. And that was just amazing to be able to communicate really for the first time in anything past just real basic, I need, I want stuff. But to have a conversation, you know, that was wonderful. And because of just routine testing with schools and things, she was finally seen by someone who was able to diagnose the autism. So I don't know that really wasn't because of the facilitation. It's just a lot more had learned, and this individual recognized the signs and the behaviors and things that made them believe she had autism.
So how does the facilitated communication work?
It doesn't work the way it looks.
Okay.
It looks like maybe you're trying to help someone, a type or point, but that's really not the way it works. And today, when they teach it, they try to teach people to encourage as much independence as possible. But for example, for Stephanie, I'll just give you an example. She has she can isolate her fingers and all to point to a keyboard, but she has great difficulty with the pressure and with going from letter to letter. So for Stephanie, what is important, and I admit it's less and less as she moves along, but what was important to her, very important to her at the beginning, was that after she touched a letter, you pulled her hand back away from the keyboard and gave her a lot of physical resistance so that she could then manage to touch the next letter. And so even though there was physical contact, the person facilitating isn't doing anything in terms of what's being typed. They're just trying to aid the individual in whatever way is needed so that they can type what they want to say. And the most amazing thing about Stephanie when she started is we realized she had a huge vocabulary and could spell and do all these things when at that point teachers were saying she maybe could read a few sight words and that was it. And so all of a sudden, you know, she's exploding with all this language. It's really amazing.
So do you need a special kind of computer or just like any old keyboard works?
Anything works. And Stephanie prefers actually a cardboard keyboard because she has a lot of pressure. And so it's harder for her to type on like a computer where she has to really concentrate on a lighter touch. Mm-hmm. So when she wants to have a conversation, she prefers just a cardboard keyboard. She's learning more and more to use a computer, and many people now use iPads and other tools and are starting out that way. You know, she's got a lot of bad habits, basically. The way it's taught now would encourage people to be able to use something electronic from the get-go.
Sure.
But that wasn't the way it was for her. In fact, this whole process was developed and started just a few years after she was born and didn't really come to this country or to Syracuse, which I believe is still probably the leading educational institution that has this available, until she was towards her late teens. In other words, she was very fortunate that the lady she learned from was one of the first people to go there to study it. So a lot has changed, and they know a lot more about how to encourage people to be more independent and need less physical touching or aid from someone else.
When you were able to have more of a reciprocal conversation with your daughter, were you surprised to find that she had been able to understand the world around her? Because I feel like oftentimes if someone has if someone is nonverbal, you sort of assume that they don't understand what's happening. Not necessarily that they do understand, they just can't communicate that. Were you surprised by that?
Yes and no, mm-hmm. in that I always believed there was a lot more going on in there than Stephanie could get out. For one thing, you could just see it in her eyes and places like, you know, that. And when you're watching a movie, she would laugh before everyone else in the appropriate spot. Or, I mean, you knew she had reciprocal language. How much surprised me. The fact she could read like she did and could spell and do all these things certainly surprised me. But the fact that she understood didn't really surprise me. The depth of her understanding did. But I never doubted she didn't know some language. And one of the things was that she would read, not a lot, but I mean, she could always pick out her name and her sibling's name and different things if there were cards or things around. So I knew she had some reading. It was pretty amazing, though, to learn the extent of it and how intelligent she was and how deep thinking she was. But I guess if you sit around for whatever 18 years and can't really communicate, a lot's going on in there.
I would imagine so. And you mentioned that she got to take some classes at NWAC.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those was a creative writing class, which sort of led to the creation of this book, Paula's Journal.
Yes. I wish I could remember her instructor's name. I believe she took maybe more than one writing class, but they really encouraged her, and she did well on the papers and things that she turned in. And somewhere along the way, she decided that she needed to basically journal more and then write a book basically about her experiences in life, even though she wrote it as a fictional diary. It still has a lot of personal information.
I was wanting to ask you about that because I got to read the book, Paula's Journal, and the main character in the book is Paula. And when I communicated with Stephanie over email, she had said, you know, originally it had started out as Paul and then became a girl. And it's based on her experiences, but it is fiction. But it based on her her experiences. So I want to ask about the train. That the train seems to calm her down. There's always that click clack, click clack, click clack at the end of each entry. Is that true for your daughter?
Yes, and she loves trains. She loves to sit and feel the vibration of a train or listen to the rhythm of the train. And I think that is very one of the things that she finds calming and soothing. And she chose to put that between each entry because, for one thing, she was looking for something to kind of give the reader a break and refocus. So she chose that because for her it's a good thing. It's a soothing thing.
Well, what was the writing process like? I know with writers, you know, sometimes you might have a conversation with your editor or a conversation with a friend about where you want to take the story or what you want to do. But all of this is going to have to be facilitated for your daughter. She has to facilitate what she's thinking, but she also has to facilitate what she wants to actually have written down.
Mm-hmm. It was a very long and tedious process. It spanned about 7 or 8 years, probably, from the time she began till the time she was ready to let go of it. And along the journey, she actually wrote it and then had second thoughts about letting anybody read it because it was very personal. But she had, since it spanned such a long time, she had several different people that would help her, who would facilitate, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 different people facilitated for her. And because it's hard for her to facilitate on a computer keyboard, she would facilitate on her cardboard board. So then someone would have to write down what she facilitated, and later then, and very often it was me, the typist, who then would take that and type it so that she could come back and read it and reorganize or edit and start again. So it was a long, slow process. I would never have had the patience to complete that.
And in when she was facilitating with the Carver, which you brought me an example right here, so it's just a matter of her pointing to letters, and so you basically spelling out the word.
Yes, she spells out the words letter by letter, just as if you were typing on a keyboard, you would have to hit letter by letter.
Right, and this cardboard keyboard that you have here in front of us has, like a regular keyboard, has the numbers and then has the QWERTY style that we're all used to. But it also has the words stop, space, yes, no, and help me relax.
Yes, and those are just little shorthand spots for her so she doesn't have to spell out words like yes and no,
mm-hmm.
Or space, which sure. She doesn't always use. Normally she just kind of hesitates between words.
Mm-hmm.
And stop and help me relax are words that help her control a little bit without having to actually type out a sentence that, you know, we got to quit for a minute, we got to stop here, we've got to let me regroup.
So what was, like you said, it took a long time to get it written, several years, and then decided to put it out there. So then there's a whole publishing process. Were you sort of the go-between for that? What was that process like?
Well, actually, I don't want to take too much credit. Stephanie and her brother has actually a good friend that Stephanie had met who was an author,
mm-hmm.
and who helped do the research to find a way that Stephanie could do self-publishing. We had spent a long time sending work off and found out very quickly that that's a very hard thing to do, especially if you're not already published.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman's name is Mike. He actually went through the process before he told Stephanie about the company she used and everything to make sure it worked, and he then shared all that information with her, and then I helped do some of that communication and everything on the publishing.
Well, what was it like for you to be able to read all of this knowing that it was inspired by actual events in your daughter's life?
Well, sometimes, I would just smile and it would be wonderful, but then lots of times I would just go away and cry because of things that she was telling me that I had no way of knowing at the time when they happened, how they affected her, how she really felt. And some of the things that happened at school or when she was away from me and my sight, I didn't even know about. And there's, I don't know how many diary days are in the mm-hmm. book, but there's probably an equal number she left out of the book. So she wrote a lot before she decided which ones to include. And I mean, there were things I learned about her life that were just heartbreaking. And then other things were just wonderful. You know, some of the challenges she met and succeeded on. And the thing I learned, I guess, most about my daughter through that whole process was how important it is for her to seek her independence and her own life.
And she's done that, no?
She's working on it, and I guess that's something we all work on forever, really. But she has definitely made a lot of headway and is doing things that I never thought were going to be a reality for her. I'm not sure. She may have thought so, but I didn't. You know, I'd worry.
By you reading this book, you learned a lot about your daughter, but what do you hope or what do you think that other people can take away from reading this?
Well, I think there's several things. You can learn a lot about autism and how it is to have to deal with the world when you have autism. The other thing that I know I took away from it, and I know it's very important to Stephanie, is accepting people for who they are at the core, not how they look or act or the fact that a baby crying may set them off or make them have to get up and leave a room or something, but to give everybody a chance to learn who they really are.
That was Holly Fields talking to Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda inside Studio 123. Holly's daughter, Stephanie R. Marks, is the author of Paula's Journal, Surviving Autism. The book is available at stephaniermarks.com or at amazon.com.